Welcome to MilSpouse House, where we discuss our personal experiences with being a military spouse, answer your questions, and try to navigate this journey together. I'm Erin.
And I'm Molly. So come on in, grab a coffee, get cozy, and let's have a chat.
So here we are again. I feel like it's been the longest and shortest week ever. I don't know if it's like the heaviness of winter coming that and the end of the year that I'm like, I have to get all of this stuff done. I don't have enough time. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I don't have enough time and I have a lot of stuff to do.
Weather-wise, what does winter look like in Korea?
So it's funny because everyone warned us, oh, it's so cold in Korea. I'm like, dang, okay, it's cold in Korea. And we get here and the seasons are pretty much how they were in Kentucky. It's really humid and hot in the summers. I will say, I think it's hotter here in the summer by just a little bit. But winters, we have snow. I don't know that we saw a bad winter last year in comparison maybe to past winters, but it rains a lot here. So it's the end of November, beginning of December, right? And it's raining a lot. And like it rains a lot in the summer too, because you have typhoon season, monsoon season. I think it's monsoon season. I don't know what they call it, but it rains. I don't know.
Rains a lot.
It rains a lot. So there's definitely four seasons. The fall is beautiful. All the leaves turn yellow and there's trees everywhere. Yeah, it's really pretty in the fall.
So I was born and raised in Michigan and now we're in California. And so I do miss the seasons, especially fall. I love fall, but it's so short-lived in Michigan. Peak colors are only there for like a week or two. And then it snows or there's like a windstorm and they all get knocked down. When we're recording this, it's December 1st. And I like listening to Christmas music when it's like 70 degrees outside. And
that's
and
so
it's
weird.
Sunny. It's odd. And this is not my first winter in a warmer climate because we had plenty of winters in New Orleans when we were stationed there. But it will never, because I grew up in Michigan, I don't think it will ever be normal. I don't think I'll ever get used to Christmas in a warm climate without snow.
Yeah. I hear you. When I was in Fort Bliss, I thought that we would have a warm winter. I don't know, but we didn't. It snowed. It was cold. I mean, we had a real winter. It was so strange. I was in Texas and it was snowing. I didn't know. I had never been to Texas before moving there, so I didn't really know what to expect, I guess.
Snowed twice, actually, in New Orleans, and that is, like, super rare.
Really?
I remember I worked in that childcare, and all the kids, that was, like, a lot of their first time seeing snow. So even, like, I mean, it had been, like, 6+ years, and so these, like, 6-year-olds have never seen snow. And it was just so much fun. I brought in all of my, because I didn't have winter gear. So I brought in like all of my winter stuff. And so I just like, you know, I brought in a couple extra hats. And I don't know why we brought our winter gear to New Orleans, but I don't know. It was, you know, it was packed. So we brought it.
Yeah. That makes me laugh. It reminds me of when I was substitute teaching at a school in El Paso. It was like a snowy, cold day. I don't know. It was nothing major to me. I didn't feel like it was that big of a deal. But I remember coming down the stairs at the end of the school day, and all these kids are huddled in the hallway. And I'm like, oh my gosh, are we having a tornado? Like, what is happening? Why aren't the kids out getting picked up? And it was simply because it was too cold outside. By the teacher's standards. And I was just like, too cold outside. What are you talking about?
Throw a jacket on.
Put on some mittens.
Right.
Like, I just thought it was so funny because, I mean, in Kentucky, that would not have happened.
No, in Michigan either. And I remember I was I was probably the only one in my town that had, one, any experience driving in snow, and two, a four-wheel drive at the time with a snow setting, because we knew that we were going to move back to Michigan. And so we were like, we better not get a car that can't perform in the snow. So we got a Jeep. And yeah, I had a snow setting and I learned how to drive in the snow. So I actually took driver's training in the winter.
Oh, wow.
And so that I would, my parents encouraged me to do it like that so that I would gain confidence in the snow. And that first winter with your permit wouldn't be as scary because you learned how to do it in the snow. And so I know how to drive in the snow, but everybody else in my town did not. And so I stayed in because I was like, even though I know what I'm doing, everybody around me doesn't. And so I'm not going to get hit because of somebody else. So I just, I think I walked to work that day, even though it was right around the corner. I mean, it was walkable, but I threw on all my winter boots and you know, everything, and I walked to work, and people looked at me like I was insane. And I was like, it's beautiful outside, the white powdery snow, and it was not cold. I mean, it was probably, you know, 20 to 30 degrees
of nothing.
I remember when I went home one time, I think in college, and it got down to like negative 10, and then of course wind chill added on that, you know, drops it even more. So like, yeah, I was like 20 to 30 degrees. I don't even need a jacket. This is so funny. And then, you know, our first time going home after living in New Orleans for a couple of years, I got cold so fast, and my, you know, my friends and family were like, your blood thinned out so like quick down there, you know, you're not used to it. So I thought that was funny. I was like, I wonder if there's any like medical evidence, like can your blood actually thin out, or are you just, you know, your tolerance is down? Like, what is it?
Yeah. I wonder about that with, like how we're going to feel when we come back to the States and the air quality is better, because the air quality here is trash. I mean,
hey, here in California too, though.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, like, we have this app on our phone that tells us, and you can use it for the States. I mean, sometimes I'll just like get on there for fun and look at how, like, the different cities and see what their air quality is like. But yeah, it gets pretty bad in Korea. And so that's why the whole wearing masks thing wasn't really a big deal. It isn't a big deal for people in Korea, because they're so used to wearing masks because the pollution is so bad.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, I know that Molly and I tell a lot of our stories and our experiences, but we are here for you. We want to hear from you, hear your questions, and try to help you as best as we can. If you could ask us anything about transitioning into the military, out of the military, PCSing, getting on post or base for the first time, the way that you could ask them is through our Instagram, MillSpouse_house. We do have a Facebook page, MillSpouse House. And then we have a contact on our website page, which is millspousehouse.vaclaimsinsider.com.
Yeah. And one thing we're going to do going forward is we're going to take those questions and we are going to, you know, record a podcast answering them. And that podcast will air every, you know, let's say second Wednesday of the month. And so you'll have like up until that date to get in your questions, and then we'll record a whole episode answering all of them once a month.
Yeah. I know that for me, my cousin was career military and so served over 20 years. And when I first became an Army wife, I had no idea about anything really. And I was just so lost in all of the information, all of the expectation, all of the, you know, a whirlwind that is becoming a military spouse. And asking her questions was so helpful for me, because we can guess what your questions are or what you as listeners want to know, but it's so helpful to hear from you. And then we can tailor our episode to you specifically.
Yeah, like if we get the same question X amount of times, that will tell us, hey, there's a lot of people out there that want to know this. We should, you know, dedicate a whole episode and go into this further.
There's so many things that you could try and like Google, but there's so many topics that you can't. Here's an example. When I was in Korea for the first 6 months, I was pretty much illegal because I did not know that I had to go to the passport office and get what's called a SOFA stamp on my passport to say, I am here legally. I am all right to be in Korea. I'm good. Oh, wow. I've done everything I needed to do, because they didn't tell me. You would think that they would just stamp your passport as soon as you got off the plane, but they didn't tell me that. And there's so many things that you're just expected to know, but you can't know everything. There's no manual that says this is how you be a military spouse at every single location, at every installation. Each installation is different. And it would have been nice to know that flying over here in Korea, we stop at Japan, but you are literally in this very small room with everyone else on the plane, if you fly with the military, for hours. And the only vending machine takes Japanese currency, which no one had. There's little things that you don't think about.
Yeah, that's
or
so
even
crazy.
Just mentally prepared for that. Oh, it was exhausting. And then when we got off the plane in Korea, we had to wait another like four hours, five hours to get shipped to the quarantine center, which was just barracks rooms. And even then, like, you're sitting there forever waiting. It's just
I would have been so hangry.
Oh my gosh, it was awful. And the kids are so tired by that point, and they're so upset, and I'm like, they'd be crying. I'm like, I'm right there with you. I am tired of this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I would have never thought of that, cuz I've never moved, you know, I've never gone overseas with the military. And so you don't know until you know. You know, until you're in it. And so, if you do have a move coming up overseas and you want more information about it, let us know. Erin might have gone through it.
Yeah.
Or if you're getting ready to process out of the military, let me know. I might have some tips for you. It's just, you don't know until you're in it.
And you can't ask your family questions if they were never in this life. We really are a community of spouses that have a special shared experience. Even if our experience is different with each part of our journey, it is a shared experience of we are military spouses. We understand what you're going through. And my family doesn't understand. My friends don't understand. Only other spouses do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's so hard. It's so, so hard. And that is the whole purpose of this podcast, is to make sure that other military spouses don't feel as alone as we did when we were in the thick of it. Sometimes I still feel alone some days more than others in the aspect of, even though we're out of the military, he still works with military. And so then that brings its own challenges.
Yeah.
And so you're always, once a military spouse, always a military spouse. But some of the things are hard to shake. Like, sometimes I feel like, I have to almost, I sound crazy even saying this in my head, but like, I am looking ahead thinking, okay, when is he going to go on a trip? When is he going to go on a training? When is he going to go on a deployment? And I forget, like, oh, wait, he's not out. It's not how the real world works. And that's not how companies work out of the military. And I have to remind myself of that, because I feel like I got so used to being prepared for him to leave that it's been so long since we've been separated. Those things die hard.
that is such a good topic, too. The anticipation of deployment. how you deal with that, because that's something I've actually been thinking a lot about lately, because my husband doesn't deploy out of Korea because it's already a kind of a deployment. It's not really a deployment. It doesn't feel like it, but but he doesn't deploy out of Korea. But when we go back to the States, I mean, the deployment is inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's definitely going to happen again. How do you navigate that? Waiting for that second deployment, what was that like for you? Because you knew it was going to come.
Yeah, and it came sooner than we thought. So he got home from his first deployment right after the new year, so like January. Then he deployed again in November, right after Thanksgiving. So he wasn't even home a full year before he deployed again. But yeah, the unknown date, the unknown, all the unknowns make it really hard. So I feel like I controlled what I could, which was my mindset. And so mm-hmm. I just prepared for it at every single stage. And then I kind of looked at all of the trainings, because I don't know how other bases do it, but and other, I guess, MOSs or jobs do it. But right. He had a lot of trainings leading up to his deployments. Right. And so I kind of used those as like a preparation, even though they weren't nearly as long as the deployment was going to be. I used those as preparation, saying goodbye to him and figuring out how to do things on my own. And so I kind of used those to prepare myself mentally for it. But yeah, there's no true preparation for it. I will say I always liked to make care packages. And I think on the second deployment, I don't know if it was the first or the second, I made cards for him. So I got like funny cards, sweet cards, and I wrote them beforehand. And then I sent them with them. So I put them in a suitcase and I wrote on envelopes, open this when you're sad, open this when you miss me, and on and on and on. And I think I did like 10 or so.
Oh, I love that.
And that gave me something to do leading up to it. And then
kind of gets you in the mindset.
Yeah. And then making the care packages, because I would go like all out on the care packages. I would decorate the box and I would just deck it out. And so I used my creativity as kind of like a coping mechanism almost, leading up to the deployment and within the deployment too. But I also worked a lot, especially the second deployment. I worked a lot and I kept myself busy. And so I would plan, like I planned people to come down and see me. I planned little trips with friends. I just planned so much. And so I had little markers, if you will, in the deployment. And then the second deployment, I was also pregnant. So that kept me really busy, because in pregnancy, you have a lot of appointments, a lot of milestones. I got to look forward to baby showers, people coming down to see me. I had like checklists. And I never actually counted the days or the weeks or even really the months. I tried to not fixate on, okay, 2 months has passed, especially because a lot of the times the time that they come back is so unknown. Like we didn't know when he was coming back until I think a week before. We didn't know months ahead of time.
Right.
And then the date is so unknown. You don't know the date until they're like on the plane. So in a way that helps, because you don't have a date to count down to. So that kind of prevents you from counting down to
right.
Anything. The Navy has 6 month deployments. So I knew that it was going to be around 6 months. And so that was the only thing I kind of went on. And I would have like non-military ask me like, how much, you know, when is he coming home? How much longer do you have?
And I don't know.
I find it so weird that I wouldn't have an answer for them. I don't know when he's coming back. And they kind of look at me and they're like, what? And then I add that I don't know where he is. And they're mind blown from there. It's like, no, I don't know where he is. I don't, you know, I have a general idea of where he is.
Right.
But I don't know. Because I guess the two lead ups were a lot different, because the first lead up to the deployment, we knew it was coming. It happened a little bit sooner than we thought, kind of like the second one. But I was graduating college, so I was busy.
Right, you were very busy.
That comes into that. And then,
right.
You know, the last 2 weeks leading up, we were moving in together. So I felt like we weren't really fixated on, oh my gosh, you leave in 2 days, you leave in 2 weeks, you leave next month. So I really tried not to get fixated on how much time I had before he deployed, just like I didn't get fixated on when he was coming home. Because there's only so much you can control in the military. And it really is, like, you hear the phrase, hurry up and wait. That is so true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wrapped up in it. You know, everything is a rush and then you're waiting forever. They could say that you're deploying tomorrow and like everyone's running around with their head chopped off trying to prepare. And then they're like, oh, but we forgot this, and this has to happen before. And then you're waiting.
Like a week or something or a couple days. So,
I would really, really try not to get fixated on dates, times, all of that.
I know that's something I'm going to struggle with. I mean, that's why I brought it up, because the first deployment we were engaged and then we moved to El Paso, then we moved to Korea, and my mental health just really took a toll. And I'm in a great place now. If you need to go see a therapist, go see a therapist, because they are really helpful. And it's okay. I just want to say it's okay to do so. It doesn't mean you're a weak person. It just means you need some guidance and some help. And it really, really helped me and it helped my marriage. It's something that my husband works on with me. So I feel like I have a support system and I have a team. But my marriage is in such a great place right now. And we are really enjoying our time together. It is just us. And I think instead of seeing that as, oh, we miss everyone, we've really taken it as an opportunity to grow as a married couple and to become a team, because we've only been married for, well, now 2 years and, you know, a few months. And so we're really in this great place. Mm-hmm. And guess what? We're going to be going back soon. I don't know exactly when we're going back, but sometime next year, because there's a couple factors that may make it earlier. I'm not sure yet.
You don't know.
But I don't know. I don't know when we're coming back, but it may be sooner than later. And I'm kind of in this place of our whole routine is going to be different. We're going to be around different people. We're going to be doing different things. It's America again. So that's going to be completely different, because I'm used to not walking down the street and having small talk with anyone or understanding really what, like, those side conversations, you know, you're walking down the street, and people are talking. I don't know what they're saying right now, but when we go back to the States, I'll be able to understand everything. And I feel like that'll be overwhelming at first, but just that change, you know, as soon as you get comfortable, something changes, like UPCS or the deployment aspect of when he deploys again. You know, I'm so used to him being here. I'm so used to having us together. And I'm also used to having him basically to myself and vice versa. Because we don't really have a lot of friends out here. And that's a great advice, to do little things to prepare yourself. Like, I love the note writing before the deployment. That's because it kind of gets you into that mindset of this is coming. Prepare yourself as best as you can, which, I mean, as best as you can. You can't really.
I still have my, I was big into pre-kids. I was big into like my planner. And so I would, you know, every Sunday, the type of planners where like the stickers.
Yeah.
It was like more of a creative outlet again than anything. But I loved planning. And so I should dig up those planners and see what my checklists were leading up to deployment, because that would be kind of interesting to look back on, because I'm blanking right now. I'm like, I'm sure I had checklists, to-do lists, things to do beforehand, after all the stages. And I want to go back and reflect and see what my planner looked like the weeks leading up to deployment. So that would be interesting.
Yeah. And there's things that you have to do, like becoming your spouse's power of attorney, so you can make decisions while they're on deployment. And that's not something I ever really thought about until starting to think about it again.
Yeah. Oh, I remember one thing that we didn't think about. For some reason, I wasn't on the lease as the primary. He was.
Right.
They messed it up because we wanted us to be on it, obviously, together because we knew that he was deploying, but they didn't understand that. And so we found out, I don't know how much beforehand, but that he was primary. And so like, if they had to do anything, they would contact him. And I was like, well, that's not going to work for the next 6 months.
It's not
going
to happen.
No, we would like pre-write out our rent checks actually drop them off. And so I remember we had to change something with that. And it's just like the little things that you don't think of, like the reminder text or something with our dentist. He was the primary because it was TRICARE or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like the reminder texts were going to him instead of me.
Because like, he's your things. Sponsor.
Yes. Little things that you don't think of that like you need to take care of before a deployment. Because they're not always going to be. I know there was a couple of weeks that he was completely out of cell phone range because he was on a ship. So like there was no contacting him. And basic training kind of gets you used to that because it's 8 weeks of pretty much zero contact. But it's a totally different ball game when it's zero contact when they're deployed. And that's so scary. And again, I tried not to focus on it, but I think that was the hardest time in deployments was when he went no contact. Cause again, I was used to not knowing where he was, but at least I was getting some response. He would text me like his morning or my morning or something. We would contact every day, even if we didn't talk all day, obviously, at least one contact a day. We didn't know when he was going no contact. So I was preparing for, one morning, just no contact. And that was something super hard to get my brain around. And luckily we did have the warning before he went on the ship and that kind of stuff. So he never just dropped off the face of the earth on me. Not that I can remember. I would think I remember that.
There was one time when Adam was deployed when we were engaged, and it was towards the end. He was on a call. I can't remember if he was on a call with me and had to rush off, or he sent me a message, and it basically, he was like, I'm not going to be able to talk to you for like the next however long. Watch the news. Like, that was it. And so I was terrified. And there was, there's those times where you don't know what's going on and they can't tell you what's going on. He's almost home. Is this going to extend him? Or is he going to, is he hurt? Like, what is happening? You really don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I had, okay, so backstory. We're talking about mental health. I feel like my mental health pre-kids, I was a lot tougher. I don't know if like kids made me softer. I don't know. I did have some postpartum depression with both my babies. And so I don't know if it's like the lingering anxiety, but even talking about this, I'm like, how did I do it? How did I do this? I would lose my mind right now if you just fell off the face of the earth on deployment and there was an active conflict. Like, how did I do that? But it's that saying that you don't know how strong you are until strong is the only thing you can be. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I don't really have a whole lot of advice because looking back, I realized probably what my friends and family were looking in, seeing your husband's across the world. You have no idea where he is. There's an active conflict and you don't have any contact. How are you staying so calm?
You have to. I mean,
but you have to.
And there's going to be those moments where you may break down and it's probably going to be hard for your family and friends to understand. That's why we encourage so much to find community within the spouses around you at your installation, because I mean, they get it. They get it. I was really struggling when I first became a military wife because of the whole career aspect we mentioned before. And if it wasn't for my friend that I made at Fort Bliss, I don't know where I would be right now, because she understood. Everybody else around me with saying you knew what you signed up for. But it still was tearing me up inside that I felt like my identity was gone. And then you put that on top of it's changing constantly. You have no consistency for longer than maybe a year. Because yeah. a lot of that time is also spent getting used to your new normal and then transitioning out of that normal into a new one. And so there's not a lot of time where you're like, oh, this is consistent. At least in my, from my perspective. And it's hard for other people to understand. It's just hard.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I feel like when you're in it, it's a lot different than looking forward to it or looking back on it.
Yeah.
It's so yeah. different. It's a different perspective. But it's so weird because looking back, I'm like, how? Because I know I was struggling. I mean, I talked about I didn't watch the news. That was one of my mm-hmm. biggest triggers for anxiety. I remember this one time that the news was on at the gym and there was some sort of Middle East conflict, and I was mid workout. I had my headphones in, so I couldn't hear, but just seeing it on the TV, seeing the news headlines, I immediately just, it was like a flip of a switch. And I mm-hmm. just went into like a panic attack. And I remember I went into the bathroom and like went into like a stall, because I also was hard because I worked there. So like I was surrounded by, you know, people I didn't know. It was just like, hey, why is Molly like flipping out?
You know, really upset. And you can't just go home if it's at your workplace.
Yeah. And so I went into the bathroom, and I remember there were really small tiles on the floor. And I remembered a trick that I learned in social work to fixate on something else so that it would stop your mind from getting away from you. And so I actually ended up counting the tiles on the floor. And that's what like brought me back down to earth. But yeah, and that's, I think that was one of the many times that it did get too much for me. And I'm pretty sure that was when I didn't have contact with them. So it's not like I could be like, hey, you know, I saw this on the
news.
Are you okay? Right. I think I reached out to one of his friends that knew where he was, because he also had like the same security clearance. Does that make sense? He knew. So he couldn't obviously tell me, but at least that was like kind of my bridge to say like, hey, I saw this on the news. Do you know where he's at right now? Is he anywhere near this? And that kind of helped me as well. And who knows? Our friend could have totally been lying to us or lying to me and been like, yeah, no, possible. He's not in that area. Like knowing that anyone. I'm counting the tiles on the floor in the bathroom. Yeah, you don't know until you're in the depths of it. Whatever stage you're in, you just don't know how to handle it until you're in it.
But it's great you had that tool or that, I guess, that little trick. I don't know that I would have thought of that. So that, I mean, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. That's and I know really... another one that helps a lot of people is your senses. Mm. So, you know, find something that you can touch. What does it feel like? Find something that you can see. What color is it? Taste is one. What does your water taste like? Switching the active and passive parts of your brain. But yeah, coping mechanisms for when it does get too much, because it's okay. It's a lot. It is so much. I know that I downplayed it a lot, especially when talking to family and friends. They'd check up on me and be like, hey, how are you? And I would say something like, oh, I'm fine. And then I'd change the topic. But I feel like that was almost like my guard. Like I don't really want to talk about it, because then that makes it even more real. And then I have to like actually dig into it. Now I wish that I would have gone to some sort of counseling or, you know, gone to see someone, to talk to someone. Because I feel like that would have been super, super helpful.
And and for those of you that don't know, it is available to you. There's family counseling. You go see an actual like doctor, a therapist. There's group counseling. You may have to dig around on your installation's website a little bit, but it is available to you, because the military does understand that it's difficult. And some installations will have classes to kind of help you prepare for those deployments, or even a return home. A return home can be really stressful. And maybe your spouse comes home and they're more tired than what you thought they were going to be, or, you know, you just don't know. You don't know what to expect when they come home. So it helps you prepare for going with the flow a little bit and not expecting too much.
Yeah. Like I know a lot of, cause we work, I mean, at least I work with veterans every day cause I help with VA disability claims. We work for a VA claims insider. And so I'm a veteran coach. So I talk to veterans all day long. And one thing that I hear often is the simple tasks that they took for granted before deployment are so much harder after deployment. So I hear a lot of the times, I know it rang true for my husband a lot of the times too, was like they got so used to being in a red zone or a combat zone that it's hard to turn that off. So even like walking down the street, they're on hyper alert, or like in the grocery store, you know, when you're going down the grocery aisle and you come out of the aisle and turn, like even that simple motion is anxiety provoking for a lot of veterans or a lot of in-service members because it's a blind corner. Mm-hmm. And so they have a specific way of doing it when they're in service. So it's not blind because the enemy can be everywhere or anywhere. So that's huge. I know that we dealt with it after each deployment, but yeah, I hear it from my veterans that I work with on a daily basis all the time is the transition not only out of the military, but after deployments or trainings or anything is a lot harder than a lot of people realize.
And that's again why it's so important for you to, especially during those deployments, take care of yourself so you can be patient, receptive, in a good space for when they come home. Yeah. And for your, I mean, for yourself too. I mean, it's something I'm working on. So I'm still working on that every day, making sure that for when we go back home to the States, I'm in a good, solid place because I've grown a lot and I like who I am right now. To make sure I maintain my healthy habits so I can be stronger in those moments that are going to be pretty hard.
You got to put your oxygen mask on first before helping others.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. And that means yourself, and that means your, you know, your spouse, your kids, your pets. You have to be the best version of yourself to help whoever needs you.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for joining us today. We hope to have you here again next week. You can find us on Instagram, millspouse_house, on our Facebook, Millspouse House, or our website, millspousehouse.vaclaimsinsider.com.
Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you next week.
And from our house to yours, have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
MillSpouse House is brought to you by VA Claims Insider. VA Claims Insider is an education-based coaching consulting company for disabled veterans who are exploring eligibility for increased VA disability benefits. VACI was founded in 2016 by Brian Reese, Air Force Service Disabled Veteran and former U.S. Air Force Captain.
VACI currently serves more than 300,000 unique veterans per month across its websites and membership programs. VACI's mission is veterans helping veterans access education-based resources to get the VA disability rating and compensation they deserve.